Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash-landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous bread habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Welcome back.
Welcome. This is episode 19. Oh my God, we're so close to episode 20.
I thought you were trying to get to 25.
It's 20. Oh, I think really? 20 is like when the algorithm.
This is a tip. You have to hack the Spotify system.
That's what I heard. I don't know if it's true.
I've now told about 45 people, okay. So it better be true. You have to get to 25 episodes, and apparently then Spotify like treats you as a
because they
podcast.
Think you're actually serious about it. Because I think it's something on like 80% of podcasts don't make it to 20 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
Anyway, we have our second guest on
I'm
the
so
pod.
Excited.
I'm super excited. If you follow us on Instagram, you probably know who it is already because we posted about it yesterday. But, and we're joined by author, cook, podcast host, and IRL host of Dinner for One, Supper Club, Sutanya Dakers.
Woo!
Who turned her post-divorce Paris life into a beautiful movement of food, healing, and community. She has a book out also called Dinner for One. And her podcast is called Dinner for One. It's very easy to remember everything.
You got a good brand.
It's a good brand. Good brand. Also on Instagram, she's Dinner for One. So just remember that.
Did you have to kill anyone to get that, to get like the handle?
I'm going to plead the fifth.
And she has the best podcast voice too. So we're really in for a treat. Welcome to...
on my bike the other day, and I literally was like in a zen state. Yeah. Like you were so calm when you in the episode.
Welcome to the pod, Sutanya.
Welcome.
Hi.
Oh, she's putting
it's
it on.
It's Delilah.
We were off mic talking about how she has like a kind of voice, like a radio voice, like Delilah. I was like, do you guys know Delilah? And of course, everybody knows the icon that is Delilah. But how are you? Thank you for joining.
Good. I am so happy that you guys have decided to write this wrong.
By the way, Sutanya was very offended. She was not the first guest. So there was a little bit, there's some animosity at the beginning, but we made it right. We're good now.
Very upset you weren't guest number one. Mm-hmm. We had to catch someone when they were in town.
Yeah, I get it.
Your honorary guest number
one. Yeah, I get it. It's fine.
You're our first Parisian guest.
Ah oui.
Okay.
Echo.
So
probably.
No, she's French. So welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's a beautiful day. I'm hydrated.
We're all clinking with our glass straws. Danny has this like really bougie coffee.
I like
setup.
It.
I know.
I like the noise.
The clinking of the
and
of
it
the
makes me feel like I
thought this was
hydration.
We had a paper clip on the table, and Sutanya like stretched it out, and I thought it was your mouth guard.
Sorry,
I'm dead.
Just pop this out.
I thought it was one of those spacers have in their teeth. I was like, oh, you have to pop that out when you drink coffee.
And you just take it up.
I'm dead.
Nice day.
That was my first thought. No. Okay, so I think we should start with now that we're like so invested in your life. Always have been. How you first came to New York, mm-hmm. and then a little bit more about what I loved about your book is like the college phase, mm-hmm. or this like post-college Connecticut phase too, and hearing about how you, I don't know, going to like Connecticut suburbs is such a crazy experience from going to like where you
I
grew up
felt
in New York.
The dread.
I just
like I felt the dread that you felt living there. And I'm sorry for anyone who's from Connecticut, but it just felt like not a place for you. So
but it was weird because you had phases. I know I'm jumping ahead, but I like that you had a phase where you were like, maybe this is for me. Like when you met a guy and you're like, maybe I am a suburb girl.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, so.
Where are you from?
Backtrack.
And, give us your backstory.
I was born in Jamaica in a little town called Mandeville in the parish of Manchester. So Jamaica's broken up into 14 parishes, I want to say. Hmm. And I was born in Mandeville, which is in the parish of Manchester, which is like smack dab in the middle of the island. And I lived there until I was 4 years old. And then I moved to the Bronx, which was very different.
Can you remember?
From
like, do you
Jamaica.
Have memories?
Yeah, I remember. I was really sad, actually. I didn't want to move. I was very happy in Jamaica. I had a very idyllic childhood. But, you know, for economic reasons and just to give me and siblings a better life, my parents decided to move. But I loved living in Jamaica. And that's why my parents sent me back like every single summer school holiday. I was there. But anyway, so I moved to Jamaica. I mean, I moved to the Bronx when I was 4 in the Northern Bronx. And that was quite a transition for me because also I didn't have as much freedom as I did in Jamaica, just like running around doing whatever I wanted. I knew the entire neighborhood, like everyone knew me. So it felt very constrained. And I also did not like American food.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Like what, do you remember anything that stood out that you tried, what is this?
Story. The first time I had mayonnaise, I cried and I threw up.
You cried.
And in my little Jamaican accent, I looked at my mom and I was like, it's not my type of taste.
I'm like dying how polite you were too.
That is so cute.
So cute. Do you remember what format it was in? Like,
I think I was like on a sandwich or something. I don't know. I just remember like eating so many tasteless, plasticky, weird stuff.
I didn't eat.
Like I, the only thing that I would eat is like when my mom would cook Jamaican. Like I just couldn't stomach anything. I thought it was all disgusting.
Can you give like a quick overview of like some top of your favorite
Jamaican food?
Yeah, like mom cooked dishes.
Whew. Well, we have like, it's similar to polenta in the sense it's semolina, but we eat it in porridge form. So it's like very like milky, like liquidy. It's called cornmeal porridge. That's like a breakfast. I love it.
And it's just plain.
Yeah, just playing with like sugar and vanilla and stuff.
Oh, cool.
We also have, before I go there, the thing about Jamaican cuisine that I love about it and that makes it so interesting in my eyes is the fusion of different cultures and people and food techniques. So you have the enslaved Africans that were trafficked to the island that brought with them their kind of cooking culture. And in some cases, you know, they had some spices and seasonings and things that were like, you know, brought over with them. And then for a long time, Jamaica was colonized by the English, and then the Spanish were there as well. And then the French were there for a very short period of time. And then you have like Portuguese Jews that came to the island. You have Chinese indentured servants after slavery that were brought in to work the land. And then you also have Indian, that's a huge Indian population as well, Indian indentured servants that were brought over to Jamaica. And then you have like a huge Lebanese population as well. So all of that has influenced the food. So it's very, it's very like interesting and dynamic. That said, I also love like fried dumplings and like plantains and like salt fish and like jerk chicken and stew chicken and curry goat and curry chicken and everything.
So
and
a lot of flavor.
I can
so
imagine.
Much of an opposite experience. I feel so like as a flavor. Kid, like you
that's
had a widened palate, and
that's
then you
why
had to like
I wasn't
reduce
about that
it.
Mayo love. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck?
I do remember that my first like school lunch. I was like,
yeah,
what
you probably had a similar.
Yeah,
problem.
You were like, am I
well,
supposed to eat this?
Yes and no, because I grew up going to the United States because my grandparents lived there. So I grew up eating American food in some format. But American food, like to me, I associated American food with junk food. And obviously as a kid, it was great because I'm like Taco Bell, McDonald's, all that stuff. But then it wasn't until I got to school where I got my first like school lunch, like a public school lunch where I was like, why is this so disgusting? And why am I drinking juice out of a bag? I don't understand. But yeah, it was... I didn't really have that much of like an issue with it, but I just remember being like, this is not good, you know, but so to me, it makes sense that because too, you came from like a place that had so much diversity in food, so much actually like seasoning.
Yeah.
And
so much
like
seasoning.
That.
Wait, so but, tell us about like, it was interesting hearing from Matt, his introduction to school. I thought you had mentioned a couple times in your book about code switching, which is something that I'm so interested in, like how you experienced it. Like how was that transition at that point from 4 to, I guess, when you started to hang out with other American kids, was it seamless? Did you feel like,
yeah, what grade were you in?
I was in kindergarten. Oh, so kindergarten. I actually started school in Jamaica.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you had... I'm smart. No, but I mean, I did start school when I was in Jamaica. So the idea of being in school wasn't that too much of a stress for me, but what helped was I had a Jamaican teacher.
Oh, great.
Mrs. Willis, who I'm still very close to today, actually.
Oh, wait, that's so cool.
Yeah. And, knowing that she was Jamaican helped me with the transition. And then also where I grew up in the Bronx, in the Northern Bronx, had a huge like kind of middle class West Indian population, specifically Jamaican. So it was really, there were other Jamaican kids in the class, other people that whose parents, like the accent was familiar. So it wasn't too difficult in like culturally, but it was more difficult just not being in Jamaica in a place that I loved, and like having to do with winter and snow and not having the freedom that I had when I was in Jamaica. I think that was
and less access to nature.
And less access to nature as well. And I didn't have my tricycle, and like it was, I had a red tricycle. It was a vibe. And it was just
so
like
so cute.
I need this.
Like, what's your culture shock? The first time I had to live without my tricycle.
I didn't have my freedom.
Well, that makes you know. Yeah. Like, and did it feel more like claustrophobic? Because it's like the city is so dense.
Yeah, and a lot of people, and it was so noisy, and it was just really. And also, like back in those days, like I don't know about anyone else, but I feel like our parents didn't really talk to us, right, and tell us what was going on. I feel like maybe like parents our age. If I had a 4-year-old, I'd be like, okay, so, you know, mommy and daddy were moving to New York or Paris or Hong Kong, wherever, moving to this new place. You're going to have new friends. You're going to, It was just like the day before, it was like, oh, we're leaving. And it's like, leaving.
That's insane. I didn't understand. Have like time to process.
I'd never been on a plane before. I'd never.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I just got on a plane. And landed in this.
Did you understand that you weren't going to go back? No. I mean, I guess you went back in the summer.
I went back in the summer. I didn't understand.
But you didn't understand you're moving to a new place.
I didn't know that I was moving. And I was like really depressed for like the first 5 years of my life.
That's like, crazy. I remember that.
I cried every day about wanting to go back to Jamaica when I wasn't there. And every time I had to come back to the New York, I was a wreck.
Wow. When, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. When did you remember finally accepting or adapting or being like, okay, this is where I live now?
Yeah, I think it was about 9 or 10. And that's crazy. Like, well,
you're like,
might
as well.
Right at the age of hormones start.
Yeah, you start like the chaos again. Like, this is it. I'm not going anywhere.
Was there anything you liked about New York, even those few first years? Or anything that you're like, okay, this is okay, I guess?
No.
No, I hated everything.
I hated everything. I didn't really like living. Yeah, I don't think I really enjoyed living there until I got a bit older, and like me and my friends could like hang out in Times Square, like hang out at like the Met or like the Museum of Natural History, whatever.
By the time you were a cool New York
kid. By the time I was
there's
a cool
no
New York kid
then.
And
then
I
thought you were better than everyone.
Yeah. But prior to that, no, I hated it.
And besides and the mayo really, and the food, is there any other specific like first culture shock you can recall that you're
my fifth birthday. So I just moved to the States I'd moved like January, February of that year.
Oof, rough time to move to New York.
Oh my God,
being stuffed with fucking mayonnaise. Now you're saying I was so depressed. And it was my fifth birthday in September. And so my parents decided to throw my birthday party to go away for me to like my friends and like, you know, the parents. Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you forget your parents were young when you were young.
Yeah.
So my dad must have been like 32.
Now that I think of that as like baby age.
Yeah.
Like younger than me. And you have a 5-year-old. Like, no wonder I have.
How dare you? Yeah. Which is crazy because it's a pretty normal age for a parent.
Like, yeah. God. And my dad, I found the picture. My dad is wearing like a silk black shirt.
I'm dead.
Like buttons.
Was he a big button down to the
gold
belly
chain.
Button kind of guy?
Rum in hand. It's like a sound system. Curry goat. And like a cake, but like who knows what kind of
it's
cake.
It's curry goat. Sorry, I'm going to ask a dumb question. It's actual goat?
Yeah.
How do you find goat in New York? Is it easy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's at the butcher.
Yeah.
Cool.
I
mean, they don't buy the whole goat.
I may say this as a family who used to roast a pig in our backyard. Yeah, so like,
and he just like opens the door, welcomes people, and people were like the kids that were of Jamaican descent, like they got it,
right?
But the non-Jamaican kids,
they were like what kind of party?
Like it's a themed party.
And I think the parents thought they were gonna like drop them off,
and they stayed. Like, oh, because it was a parent.
And I think the parents thought they were gonna drop them off, and then that's it. My dad is like, come inside. They're like.
Wait, I kind of love that though. What actually a fun way to build community.
I do the visual of your dad in a silk shirt and a rum in hand, gold chains, chest hair.
A lot, but like
I had the same
just enough.
I was like, chest hair?
Just enough. Yeah, you look so young too. It's so it looks so different now.
I always think of that scene in Parent Trap. Anyone when she like unbuttons his shirt and she's like, I just want a little chest hair. Meredith, you don't remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh my God,
I love that. That's
a kid because I was like, that's so gross as a kid. Then like as an adult, I'm like,
you're like, I want to smell it.
I need more. Okay, I want to hear more about like this move to, did you move to Connecticut for a job?
No, I moved for a university.
Oh, so okay, okay. So yeah. You went to university there. Mm-hmm. And how was that adjustment? Because like I've never gone from, I've gone from suburb to city.
Yeah.
I've never gone from city to suburb.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, also I didn't have a driver's license when I moved, right? Because makes sense. I'm from New York City. I need a driver's license. So it's so funny. Like it was back to kind of that feeling that I had when I moved to New York of being very like constrained and like very feeling stuck. Because I was stuck on this big ass campus with like weird suburban kids. It's fucking weird, man. And sorry to anyone who grew up in the suburbs, but y'all are fucking weird.
No, I think
this is the second time we've shit on Connecticut like 5 minutes ago.
It's not like Connecticut is lovely. Like West Hartford looks like the Truman Show.
Yeah, it's true.
It's so nice. It's so beautiful. Like where I went to school was where like Gilmore Girls was filmed, right?
Oh,
so like
my God.
The house that Rory's grandmother lives in, like I was like walking distance from my university campus. So it's a really lovely state and lovely place, but I just...
A lot of weirdos.
But to go from New York to Connecticut, I'm sure it's like, especially so young.
So it was a interesting cultural experience in terms, I don't know, like doing stuff like just driving around aimlessly.
It's all
suburbs. And there was a lot of there was a lot of drinking that I wasn't exposed to. Like me and my friends didn't drink when you were teenagers. No. The first time I got drunk, I was 20 and I was in Australia.
Wait, Sue, that's crazy.
Yeah. I just didn't
Didn't feel any
urge. No, we didn't need to. We had things to do.
Yeah. I think that's probably true. We didn't need to, we had things to do.
Like there was no reason for us to drink.
Yeah,
like,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Wow. But it was really quiet. I just remember, I mean, it was such a long time ago. I didn't stay very long on campus because I didn't like living in a dormitory.
It's like a fake world.
I wasn't feeling it. So then I got a townhouse off campus with some friends.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And we lived off campus.
And what, nice. Like, you talked about, like, the first time you started to have inklings of elsewhere. Or, like, you talked, obviously you studied French. Yeah. But you were talking about fashion blogs and
Oh, my God. Blogs, we wear what? Or forget the name of
it.
And this woman, she's still around, Crystal Bick.
Oh my God, yes.
Like I remember following her. And also, what's her name?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Chaux Rouge, Christina.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
She's French, though.
Yeah, yeah, she's half French.
I love her. I met her one time in New York.
We
followed all these people. Who she was.
Yeah. And she seems really nice.
I just saw her the other day. That's so
super
funny.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Super nice. And then I started following her. I met her on an event. And my friend's like, oh my God, it's my favorite influencer. And I was like, she's an influencer? I'm like, I didn't know. And then I started following her. And now, like, I love her.
Yeah, she's really cool.
She seems more normal. I never forget. She did an ad for Marseillaise, you know, the soap. And I was like, oh my God, her French is amazing. And I was like, oh,
she's half French. She like grew up here.
Okay, so I feel like we followed the same people. Because that was how I also was. Like, I would sit in my basement and, like, go on, like, so many blogs. I was obsessed with them.
100. Yeah, I couldn't get enough of them just to see what was. Because I also got kind of. I got so used to, because I started looking at these blogs like around grad school, when I was in grad school, and I'd gotten so used to suburban life because it was also so easy.
Right.
And so conflict free and just so you knew what was going to happen. It was predictable. It was safe. And I had a good life in Connecticut. Like there was no reason for me to, I was in grad school, but I had a good job and I had my friends and I had my apartment. And everything was just so...
You were saying your rent was like, what, $300
each? $350 a month for this amazing apartment on Prospect Avenue. We had a clawfoot tub.
Oh,
we had a balcony in the back. And also, Scott, wherever you are, shout out to you. Sometimes, because of my bad budgeting, which still, you know, I still have that problem today, I wouldn't have the $300 for my rent. And so I would like go to Scott's office and I'd be like, Scott. I might be a little late this month. You're like, it's okay.
Oh, that's nice.
Anyway.
Scott made you the woman you are.
Right.
couldn't have made
it just
this
felt
life.
so easy. And it was so boring. And like, I just, these women, it just kind of showed me that there was something, like I knew that there was something else, but they kind of highlighted even more the fact that this not safe life is an option, you know? Because it was her and it was also like, in terms of in Europe, I forget her name, but there was this woman who was American from New York. She was living in Paris. Now she's still here, but she's in the suburbs. And she was dating this French guy. Well, dating a bunch of French guys. And then started dating this one French guy who's her now husband. And they have a kid together. I want to say her first name is Lisa. I can't remember. And then there was Jeanne Damas. I used to follow her on Tumblr.
Who?
Jeanne Damas. She does.
She sounds familiar.
She does Rouge.
Yes. Yeah.
The one who's the founder of Rouge.
Yeah, founder of Rouge. I used to follow her on
Tumblr. I was like, why does that name sound familiar?
I used to follow her on Tumblr.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah, and there's so many. It's so funny. There's so many. There's this other friend, this other black woman, but she lived in Metz, M-E-T-Z, and she was an artist, and she had like met this French guy. And
How did you find them? Do you remember?
I don't remember how I found them. So but they were like so different, all of them, and like living these different lives. And I just found it so interesting. Also because like them talking about like, oh, I went to the bakery today and this happened, was so much more interesting than me going to fucking like CVS.
Yeah. Maybe they thought you're like, well, maybe they would have thought my well. CVS. I don't know. Like, these days I find CVS pretty engaging.
But to me, it's very interesting that you were like kind of stuck in a, not stuck, but you were in a place where you're like, this is kind of boring, but it's safe and I'm just going to continue doing it. And you kind of found a little bit of an escape through them.
Yeah.
And then my question is, so you're in Connecticut. Do you think your path coming to Paris would have changed if you would have maybe moved to New York or somewhere else, like a more exciting city? Or do you think being in Connecticut was what made you realize there's something else?
Yeah, no, I think my path would have been completely different if I hadn't met my ex-husband.
Well,
but you were already a little bit interested in France. I don't know if you were following these people, because like I wasn't following bloggers in France. I was following, like, I was obsessed with New York. So like I was following all like the cool girls in New York. So like, did you have like a,
it's so funny because I studied French in high school and college. I was never that good. I was better at comprehension. I think I just found one like American in Paris. I know, just looking on blogs and stuff. And then that just led to others, because in those days you'd like link to other blogs and stuff. So I just found, but it was just because I found this one person, which I don't know. I don't remember how I found her, but it wasn't about France. It was about this life that they were living that was so different from mine.
Right.
In some ways, I guess, reminded me of New York. Cause if I move back to the city, I could have something similar to this, this dynamic kind of lifestyle that I wasn't living in Connecticut, driving over fucking Avon Mountain every day.
Yeah.
It's a goddamn insurance company.
Were you at all, I mean, you kind of answered this already, but so you, it's not like you were like into French guys necessarily.
Even when, so I studied French, right? Mm-hmm. And you would think when someone studies a language, when they study abroad, they're going to go to that country. I went to Australia. I was like, I'm going to go to Paris. Like, I don't care, whatever. I had no desire. I really had no desire to like.
Yeah, because you know some people are obsessed with like moving to France or to Paris. No, yeah, me either.
So interesting. Well, I guess this brings us to the natural transition, which is like, we got to talk about TFM.
Oh my God.
So you're going to have to do a little intro for, I'm sure some people listening have read the book. Yeah. I'm sure some people listening know your podcast. Yeah. I'd imagine a lot, frankly. But can you give us a little spiel about, I know it's very hard to distill, but about meeting him and making the decision. I don't know. One thing that came up a lot when I've been thinking about dating very differently recently, and a lot of acknowledging that some of dating is access no matter what. And especially when you're abroad, understanding that like someone can allow you access to a new culture. So talk a little bit about how that allowed you to open up your life, but then maybe obviously some of the, you know, downsides or complications that come with it, you know?
I was so young when we met. I wasn't even thinking like that in terms of access to a culture or whatever. I was just like, this is a hot French man and this is cool. I was 23, 24.
You're like, it's like, a movie. That's
I wasn't thinking about this. I was like, oh my God. And
you met by chance because you weren't supposed to go that night.
I wasn't supposed to go. It was his last night in New York.
I didn't know it was his last night.
It was his last night in New York. I wasn't supposed to go out. I wanted to go home. If Audrey hadn't prayer pressured me into going to that second place, I would have never met him. I wouldn't be.
So it wasn't
there.
Even the first bar, it was the second bar.
It was, we went to, what was the name of the hotel? You went to it was on Princeton Green, I remember that. Hotel Mercer. Mercer Green, yeah.
He's still there, I think.
I think he's still there. We went there and we had pizza, and I remember saying to her, that's it, I'm done with men. Like 2010 is going to be all about me, like, fuck men. And then I go to this place and I meet my future husband.
That's so funny.
But yeah, I wish
you're like everyone's worst nightmare, because everyone's like, well, if I just go, maybe I'll meet my husband. Like, listen, you're everyone's
it
worst.
It happened to me. It happened.
It can happen.
I wish I was, mature enough to have viewed my relationship in that sense of having access to culture.
An older thing.
I was 20, 23, 24. This man was really attractive. We got along really well. I was flying to Paris. He was flying to New York. We had this amazing romance, and that was it.
Wow.
That's as far as it went in my pea brain.
How long did you date long distance?
We dated for 3 years. So it was like every couple of weeks I was in Paris or he was in New York. Actually, so, okay, let me reverse. So like when we met, I was still in Connecticut. I finished up my last couple months of grad school, graduated, went on a Euro trip with Gabby IE. That was
good. I spell your name. A lot of Gabby's these days.
With Gabby IE and another friend of mine, and Paris is one of our stops. It's when I think about it, it's so wild how we were able to keep this kind of pen pal friendship thing for months, see each other July of 2010, and just I realized like I was in love with this man. It was crazy.
It is wild. Yeah. I mean, I can't even get a guy to text me back. So.
But I think because I've been in a long distance relationship too.
But we weren't dating. We were just
pen palling.
Yeah, we were just messaging it, like emailing each
other. You said like 450 emails or something.
Yeah, crazy. But that's what I'm saying. You almost communicate more when you're in a long distance relationship because that's like the only.
Oh, unless you're my last relationship.
Well, I'm just because I dated a guy also, and we were in a long distance relationship, and I think. We quote unquote moved faster, but it's because like you're talking all the time and you tell them things you wouldn't normally tell someone you're dating in real life, I think. So I think it kind of moves a little faster in some ways. But did you find when you were pen palling or long distance, did you feel any cultural differences or cross-cultural things that were like, oh, we're very different?
I mean, he was only a year older than me. And I found him to be so much more mature than the average American man.
In what way?
In like what he would ask me, in emotions, in the things he would just get out of me, the things he would share about himself. I was just like, wow, like you're a thinking man.
You said intellectual a lot. And I'm always like, I'm so doubtful that like any man is intellectual.
But he was like, just so different from the like knuckleheads that I was surrounded by and seeing and interested in Connecticut that were my age, right? He was just so different to me. And I was just so just completely enamored by him.
It's so cool.
And so impressed.
Yeah. And I like the notion you said too about like, you felt like you could be more yourself and more open. So like you were meeting more on a vulnerable, real level.
100%. And I didn't even have the words for it then. Like I didn't know what it was. I just thought he was this like really cool, funny, interesting guy that like liked me. And I've always been someone that I've never played any games when it comes to men. Like I've always just been like, I like him. And if he likes me, great. But I'm not going to do like, it's hard to get. Don't answer. Mm-hmm. Don't this. Even though Gabby with an IE would always be like, you got to do this. And you gotta
I'm the
do
same
that.
Way. And I'm maybe
like,
a Gabby thing.
Man, like I don't want to do that. And it was easy. I like that with him. I didn't have to pretend.
I could be open about
it. I could
that.
Just be as open and weird as I wanted to be. And he was like digging it.
Yeah.
Damn. So yeah.
Can you?
It would have been a great story if we had actually like stayed in love.
Yeah.
Well, this would have been a great like.
And we end the podcast. No.
But it's true. When I was reading the first couple of chapters, I texted you and I was like, I know what's coming, but right now I'm rooting for you guys because I was like. You wrote about the falling in love stage so well, where I was like,
Oh, and the giddiness of getting like a new email or, you know, like that feeling.
Or even like seeing him. Like I remember.
I got like clammy. Like when you and you're like, you're like walking towards each other. I'm like, oh my God.
Lots of great stories. It's too bad. But I fell out of love.
So many good stories. And you had so many cool like experiences when you eventually ended up moving there.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I love in the book. So I was going to like transition to like what brought you to Paris, which is obviously him. But I loved when you were talking about the first time you were here, I think when your graduation trip and all the little culture shocks you experienced your first time here. Cause I think all of us have gone through most of them. And I think the funniest one was that there was nothing open from 2 to 4 and you had to eat Chinese food as your first meal in Paris.
Literally. Like we're in Paris. I'm thinking I'm going to have like a Julia moment, right? Like I'm going to eat some like soul mein. Yeah. I mean, and like we're walking around. Everyone's like, c'est fermé. C'est fermé.
I like when you're
and
like, why?
Is family closed? Maybe my French is not good. Like, what the fuck is going? Why is
They're
everything closed?
They're just saying
closed?
Fuck you over.
Yeah. Like, why is everything closed? I did not
why
understand.
Why is everything for me?
And all the like, nice places. Yeah.
All the nice places. All the places I like bookmarked, like told, you know, Gabby and Jess, like, okay, like we're going to go this, we're going to do that. And they That's were with hard. Me and they were like, you plan this trip, Miss Virgo organizer. Like everything's closed.
Okay. So we've had already, like, you've lived in many places, Jamaica to New York, Connecticut, now Connecticut, New York, Paris.
Yes, ma'am.
So what was that last move like? Like in terms of, and you've experienced plenty of culture shock and different cultures so far, but what was that transition like moving from New York to Paris, even though you
ten
had
words or less?
Yes.
I think moving Well, I think the fact that I was coming here regularly before moving helped a lot.
Okay.
So I felt comfortable in the city. And there was something about Paris. I just instantly, like, I just really liked it from the get-go.
That's good.
I was, like, really into it. And I just felt
was
really
it, like, energy
here.
Or was it?
I just liked, yeah, I liked the vibe. Yeah. I was I liked really
it.
Into
you
it.
You have this line about terraces, which I've never thought of it that way. And you're, like, you get to, like, be a part of the energy of the city while you're... I thought it was such a cool way to describe... it that I never thought about before, but it makes such a big difference in the vibe of the city. It's like you're like
you're always a part of something. You're never closed off.
Yeah,
and I really
that's rare because in New York
that.
It's kind of like you go in and out of places, but then it's like the street is so separate from like the internal life.
You're facing the street,
and also the thing is like you could be on terrace and like not necessarily engaged with what's going on. You can be in your own world, reading, talking to someone, whatever, but you're still very. You're just, yeah, you're still there and you're still a part of it. And I really appreciated that.
It's a rare experience. It's like uniquely European because the U.S. doesn't have, I mean, now since COVID a little bit more, but it's like you sit next to a busy road. Like you're not sitting next to it. Yeah. It makes me really appreciate it more hearing that description. But anyway, yeah. So you moved here.
So I moved here and I really like the vibe. I've always just liked it. And I also think like, and I've the first time I had this realization was maybe like a year or two ago during one of my many, what the fuck am I doing here? My life doesn't make sense.
You got to have moments. One every like 1.5.
Right? And I think one of the reasons why besides just really liking it here and feeling very comfortable, Paris is the first place I actually decided I wanted to move here.
Mm. So like it was
moving
like
from Jamaica to New York was not my choice. Even in some ways going away to university in Connecticut, like my parents made it very clear that they wanted me to have this like American college culture like experience. Mm. So I had to leave, right? And then moving back to New York, it was also kind of like, oh, I'm not gonna fucking stay here, you know? So yeah, Paris is the first place that I decided I wanted to live in. So it's,
you got to make it from scratch.
Yeah, I had like to make it from scratch and make it my like my home, like how I want to live my life. So. Yeah, I think subconsciously was that, but I'm just now realizing it. But yeah, I mean, knock on wood, the transition was quite easy. And I actually like Parisians.
Hmm. What do you like about
them? Like,
I've been really lucky. I think what helped me is the fact that, number one, I was coming here a lot. Two, I find them just be big city people.
Mm, that's fair.
Which I'm used to. And being with a French man for years before actually moving here allowed me to really observe how they observe them and understand what makes them tick, understand what makes them interestingly unique, understand the culture a little more before actually like diving in and being overwhelmed by them and the differences. And so I think having like a toe in, but always being back, being able to revert back to my American culture made it easy for me when I did move here, just kind of accept them for who they are.
Mm, essentially, it was like dabble. You also get to see them, I feel like, at their best, which is an intimate dynamics, like family, like people who they really commit to. Yeah, I think that they really show their, you have like such an, I think the words you use were integration versus immersion. Mm-hmm. Was that the two? Mm-mm. One thing we've talked about a lot together, I think in general is how you even navigate that now. But when you were with him, how did you navigate that relationship between those two things? Like, how much did you want to? Because we all see a lot of people who move here and they're like, I don't want to have any American friends. I only want to have French friends and speak French. And then there's people like me who like basically only have American friends and are ashamed of it and like don't know how to navigate that difference. Can you talk about that process for you and how that's changed from then to today? Mm-hmm. And I guess also how much the divorce was a part of if that's changed at all, you know?
Well, I think in terms of immersion, I knew that if I completely immersed into his culture, who would I be? I wouldn't be this Tanya that he fell in love with and married, right? I would all of a sudden be this weird French version of myself. Who would like that? Not me. I don't think he would either.
Point. Like,
you know, so like that's not me, right? But I did know that in some ways, because I was here, it required, I wouldn't say like losing myself, but it required this delicate dance of understanding and respecting the fact that, and accepting the fact that I did move to a new country with a new culture and a new language that's gonna require, in order for me to be comfortable, require a sense of immersion and integration, but without losing myself. And you know, we spoke English in our apartment. I still had a lot of American friends or friends of different cultures. I was still very much myself. I think I realized very early on I'd never be French. I'd never be considered French. There was no need for me to try to be someone I'm not. And also, he didn't marry that person. He didn't fall in love with that person.
It's interesting that you had that like thing in the back of your head, like, well, he fell in love with who I was. Like, it's almost like a safety guard.
I also think I had, because I had the immigrant experience before, right?
Yeah.
Of coming from, even though I was little, going, you know, leaving Jamaica and going to New York. I had an accent, a Jamaican accent when I was little. I, you know, ate different foods. I had to become this, American version of myself. But I think what helped was also being from New York. So I understood that I could be both. I understood that I could be American,
but you weren't so
and still
different.
Be Jamaican. Yeah. And still, and be myself and be accepted. So I think when I married him, I almost said his name.
Ah,
when I married him and moved here, I knew that I could be both. I could be Sutania, who was married to this French man and speaking French and in some ways leading a very French life and having all these French cultural inputs and things that are changing her, and then also remain myself, the person he fell in love with and who I am and the person I like. And it's just going to be a different version of me now. Mm. But I never, there wasn't this battle. And also, like, I like myself as who I am. Like, why am I going to change?
Yeah.
Like that drastically. I was going to, you know, it was inevitable to change in any case because
we'll change
just,
in a way that's not
I was just living
yourself.
In another country. But like, yeah, like.
Did he have a problem with that?
With
or
me not.
Like not leaning into the French.
The only thing he did mention, and of course this is when we're divorcing, so like everything is coming
right.
He didn't like the fact that, and I think I spoke about this in the book, that he did have a hard time with me not, my French not being at the level that it is today, for example, where like he had to speak English with me all the time. Like I'm sure if, you know, he could have spoken French, even if I responded in English, it would have been.
Oh, you think that would have alleviated some of it?
Because he just felt like I can't be myself at home. And my friend Lauren Collins, who wrote the book, I love this book. When in French. She wrote in French. She lives in Paris. And she has this amazing line that her husband told her, because she was having, like, in the beginning of their relationship, they kind of were dealing with the same thing of, like, her not really speaking French and him having to speak English all the time. And she has this great line that her husband told her. And I'm like, fuck, I wish I'd written that in my book. And the line is, he said to her, talking to you in English is like speaking to you with gloves on, like holding you with gloves on or something like that.
Interesting.
Like he can't be himself.
Yeah,
I totally get that. And I've like, been in two relationships with someone with a different language, and like you can get close, but I think even in my last one where he was totally fluent, I could just sense like something was like a little held back, like a little like constrained. Yeah. So I think the glove thing makes sense.
I didn't get it. And now I understand, especially now since I've been in situations I've dated French men where we kind of speak English most of the time, but sometimes they'll just speak to me in French, which is fine.
Right.
And I understand, and I respond in English, and they understand. And like, we're both speaking our languages and feel like we're expressing ourselves in a way that makes sense to us.
Do you think that's the key? Way. Like, you have to be able to speak your native?
I think you have to be able to speak your native language. Mm. I do.
That's
at certain
so
points.
Interesting. So you look for that now while dating?
They have to be able to understand English.
Okay.
If they speak like, you know, if their English isn't that good, it's fine, because then if they're French, I, you know, can understand them. If they're Italian, I'm working on it.
Are we putting out a dating ad for the 1.5 men who listen to this?
If you are a Italian man, you are my next conquest.
I'm dead. I'm dying.
Sono pronta.
I'm dying. Well, can we talk about, okay, so I want to, I mean, I could talk about dating with you forever. Yeah.
About dating, like, I'm ready, you know, as I mentioned, I made this announcement a couple of days ago. I'm very ready to, like, date again in a very flirty, just fun way and just see where it goes and, you know, be, like, taken out and pampered and whatever. But
do you
want
to go
like,
back to like, I was saying, you want to go back to like 1970 when men like took it?
That's what I'm saying. Like, do people date like that?
I'm not
anymore?
Sure who's pampering anyone anymore, but.
I don't know.
Because people dated like that when I was younger.
Do you mean like took you out?
Like took you out. Yeah. Like, yeah. I want a man, listen.
Oh, it's good.
Gianluca. If you out there.
I'm David.
Whatever your name is. Ignacio, let me tell you something. What you gonna do, right? Is you gonna come to my house? You gonna pick me up? I want a man to pick me up.
In a car or a scooter?
No,
scooter?
Oh my God, if he has a scooter, like.
Yeah, matter? Okay, good.
We're not even going to make it to the. I'm done. I'm going to tell you. No, sorry. this is a kid friendly podcast. No, but I want you to, like, come to my place, like, pick me up, yeah. Like, ring the bell.
Yeah.
I'm going to come downstairs. To your door? Oh my God, I would love that. I mean, I'm going to give him my address, obviously.
We just showed up. I can't even imagine. Weird, but
come downstairs. Maybe he has flowers. If he doesn't have flowers, that's okay.
Strike one, but you let it go.
I'll let it go. And then he comes and he's like, ciao, Bella. And I'm like, ciao. Okay. And he's like, como stai? And I'm like, tutto bene.
So you're in Italy?
No, I'm here.
You're here, okay. Yeah. So Italian man in Paris.
Sure. Okay. Let's just say. Okay. We're talking about fantasies.
Right.
The fantasy is he comes and rings the doorbell.
The bar is in hell.
So funny. So low. And then if he has a scooter, right? But I'm a very, like, visual thinker.
You can find that.
I've already, like, planned this out in my head how this is going to go.
Okay.
So then, you know, I'm wearing, like, a very nice dress. It's a little short. No, it's a little short, but not too short.
Okay.
I'm wearing heels. But, like, chunky heels because okay. I don't want to, you know. And then, so I probably, you know, I probably, yeah, either my hair is straightened or I have the braids, whatever, because the fro would be hard and the curls would be hard
with the helmet. Which I'll have ready for you, and it will be exactly the size that you need.
100%.
Yes.
And he's going to be like, you know, he's a little bit taller than me with my heels on. And he's going to like, you know, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, we're going to go here, here, here. I'm like, oh, cool, fun.
Oh, also, let's end up that. He planned something.
Oh, yeah, he planned it.
I just want to throw that.
He planned it. And he puts the helmet on my head. And he does a little tie thing.
Oh, I'm doing like, the straps of the helmet.
He's like, oh, que bello. And I'm like, aww.
He like looks at his work and like, steps back to examine his.
I'm like, aw. And then we hop on the scooter and we're like, vroom, vroom. And then I have my heels on that. You see these legs I've been working on at the gym.
Mm-hmm. I'm dead.
Danny's like, wait, what the? She's like, you spent too much time on yourself.
I have an actual question yeah. around dating.
Yeah.
So I know you already visualized
yeah.
what you want.
Yeah.
And what you expect from yeah. dating.
Yeah.
How is dating different in New York versus Paris, for example? What do you think is the main difference? And even Italy. I don't know if you've dated in Italy. I know you have a love affair.
What do we call dating? I'm kidding. We're going to cut this out.
Leave it in.
In New York, see, the thing is I don't, and it's so interesting because I've never really dated in New York because okay. when I met TFM.
Yeah, you were pretty young.
I was young, and I dated in Connecticut a little bit, uh-huh. but not so much. By the time I moved back to New York, me and TFM were a thing.
Mm. Right.
So I didn't date. And then we got married, and I was 27. Oh, my God, that's crazy. Bride. And then, so crazy. Literally a child bride. And then we got divorced, and I was, what, 31? 30?
So, like, so young.
I didn't, when I started dating in Paris with apps, there were no apps. When I was...
Oh, really?
You know, no, there were no apps. I think the first app was launched the year I got married.
Wow.
Tinder was 2013. Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. That was the year I got married.
I joined late, but yeah, I think so.
So yeah, so that's... So like I heard about these apps, but I never been on them. So here I am at like 31. Never dated anyone like, you know, that wasn't a college dude my age. Just my now ex-husband. And I'm in a foreign city.
So how did you meet people? How did you date without the dating apps at the beginning?
No, I did use dating apps.
Oh,
right
you did.
After,
they,
right
like after. When
you talked about your first two dates.
Oh my God, after. Antoine.
Antoine, I can't believe
there's two Antoines, but like.
The second one
the
was
second
crazy.
One. It's fucking suitcase. Anyway. Yeah.
So not the greatest yeah. entrance.
But you, so mainly dated and met people yeah. through the dating apps.
So I can't compare New York and Paris because right. I don't know. And I don't, and I'd also be very interested to date an American man.
Because you only dated French guys.
I only dated yeah. European guys, right? Mm-hmm. So like, and I remember during the Olympics, I was like, whoa.
they're not 5'2".
Right. I was like, y'all are big. And your teeth are so strong. White. And all the Under Armour, y'all got money. What is going on?
I have a theory now.
So,
I'm like,
so
I'll
moisturized
back.
And shiny.
So moisturized. I'm dying.
And like, just so like pleasant. Like I met so many American men.
Yeah, they're big.
I'm like, what are y'all eating over there?
I know, but it's like a totally different. The way that like French men are so tiny is so hard for. And I'm like, I'm 5'8". Like, I'm not a small. Yeah, so it's impossible. I always think that like it's funny. Like the older I get, the more I accept. I was like, oh, I'll never date an American guy because like I wanted to be different and cool. And now I've done Australian, English, Italian, French. Mm. I kind of all tried a lot. And I'm like, well, I go back to America. I think I would do American who had traveled and lived in other places, you
or
know?
An American guy. Whose parents are immigrants or
I always think I could do a half and half too. Half American, half. I went out with a guy who is like South African, half French, and like interesting to see like fluent English but has the information,
multicultural,
from another.
I could never date a Latino, so
no Latino blood at all.
I dated a Latino really once.
I could never. I did it and it wasn't good.
Okay.
And I would never.
Fair.
Basically, because the way that I am in a relationship, I don't think I could be with a because
they're like so overly emotional.
No, they're very like macho. Traditional machismo. Very like I own you.
Okay.
And you do what I say.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So not every. Yeah, but of course, generalizing. I just remember growing up and being like, that's not what I want.
Wow. Fair.
so interesting.
I don't think I could date a Jamaican guy for the same reason, and then also just like. The way that the relationship between the Jamaican man and his mother.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I feel like.
Oh, no.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with the Italians.
Well, I figure, listen, here's the thing. I figure if it is, and like, okay, he could be Lebanese, doesn't have to be Italian.
I love how we're
At this point, I have a problematic take on every single cultural man. So, like, I'm the worst audience.
If they've moved abroad, and I've lived here for a couple years, and I have no desire to really like go back to wherever their country is until they are, you know, retired or whatever. That's their plan. You know, once they finish their like big city life, then things normally should be okay because they've left. They're not like living next door. I don't know. I don't know. I say all this. Watch me end up with like a Jamaican man named Winston, and I'll hate him every day for making me fall in love with him. Make his life a living hell.
I'm dead.
Maybe good food though.
Let's transition over to the birth of Dinner for One.
Yes, ma'am.
Everything. And I also love the idea, or like hearing you both talk about being single in a city that's always kind of references a city of love and romance. Like, what is being single in a city like Paris? What is it like? Is it very different from if you were single in a different city? Like, I don't know, like your perception. I know we've talked about this offline before, where it's like, how are you perceived by men here? Is dating harder? Is dating more difficult? I know, Gabby, you've also talked about this on the pod, how being single in Paris is like not that fun because like men normally don't approach you. Again, I'm not single here, so I don't know.
I think it's less because what I want to know too is like how your experience of being single, like how launching Dinner for One has helped. I get not like cure, but like kind of like soothe you through it. I find it less fun here because in New York, for me, everyone was single. Single was like a culture.
Yeah.
And again, I was 30. So like, but it was very Sex and the City vibes. Yeah. It was, and people were ready to have fun. Now, if you wanted anything serious, you're absolutely screwed.
Yeah.
But there was a playfulness and like a little bit of a sense of adventure that came with dating. Whereas here, I find it's very much like, go on a couple of dates, you're either a couple or you're not. Like there's this like quick coupling that doesn't leave room for the play that I like, which is just like, let's take time to see each other in different dynamics and discover if we really like each other. There's an air to it here that I find less fun, which is a bummer because I love dating in New York. I thought it was so fun. Mm. So anyway, like I guess you haven't lived that many other places. Yeah. So that's where it's hard to comment on. But I guess what is your experience? Like, do you feel shame? Do you feel comfort?
You know? What you mentioned about like the let's have fun and get to know each other and like the coupling up very quickly. French people couple up very quickly, but they also decouple.
Agreed, or stay together.
But I just find, you know, I had a good friend of mine, Marie, on my podcast, and I spoke to her about dating, and I was like, yeah, but in the U.S. like you date for a little bit, and then like when you're dating, that's when you get to know if you really like them, whatever, and then and then you're in a couple after like 6 months or like 9 months, whatever, then you officialize it. And she was like, what? She's like, why are you wasting your time? She was like, I meet you. I like you. We're a couple. We're together. It's just us. I'm not seeing anybody else. And if in 3, 4, 5 months I realize I don't like you, then we're done.
Hmm.
And I was like, but why? She was like, but how can I get to know you when I also am getting to know 5 other people?
I guess that's
I understand. So like, I feel like they couple up like really well, like really quickly, but then they decouple.
Well, you said this line in the book that I literally wrote it down because I'd never heard anyone put it this way. And you said, I'm trying to find it, but you said something about like they only last as long as the romance, as the feeling lasts. Yeah, yeah.
They're all about the feeling.
The feeling, exactly, the French accent. But that's so interesting to me because I think in the U.S. we have a very specific version of relationships that's like, it takes work. Like we work on this together.
Oh,
we're a team.
I don't think my friends work. I mean, like work in the sense of like, you know, I talk to my partner, I want them to be happy, whatever, but I don't get the feeling that my French friends like view their relationships as like hard work or something that they really have to give extra time and energy to, in the sense of like making it something that is healthy and something that is good for them and something that brings them joy. It's like the moment that stops, it like boom.
See, that's what I find. Yes. Yeah, but that's exactly it. Yeah. And I, as I get older, I actually prefer, now, not like there's, I don't, there's a lot of nuance to this, but like, I think I prefer this idea of like, we apparently romantic love, have you heard this, dies after like 18 months. And so it's like this idea that like the kind of like passion-y stage, now it's different for everyone, but I find interesting to like think about whenever romantic love dies for you or whenever that kind of like passion-y stage, I think it's really actually very romantic to figure out how to invest in someone and rekindle things. And France, I find defeating sometimes because of that kind of like, the, like you just said, like you're like, oh, I kind of lost I'm over it.
I don't know if, I think it, do you follow the account Meet Cutes?
No.
On Instagram?
No.
Meet Cutes NYC?
Oh, is that when it goes up because you're a couple?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God, I love when it goes up to elderly people.
I think, I think the thing that I've realized with all those couples, and they're holding hands and they're very like tactile with each other. You can tell they're very happy. And when he asked them like stories about how they met, they light up, whatever. Those people like each other. They like each other like genuinely as a person outside of like their relationship. And because they like that person, doing the bare minimum plus plus to make their partner happy doesn't feel like work. It's just like, oh, Gabby really likes when I have her Stanley cup, you know, full of water. I'm going to make sure it's full of water.
Yeah.
Like, it's like little, like, it's like the little things, and it doesn't.
And like resentment doesn't build.
Yeah, because you're doing things that you know make your partner happy.
I tell that to Paul all the time. I think that is the main key. That's it's communication and liking each other. And communicating when you don't like something. Yeah. Because, and I always say this, men are dumb.
True.
And and like, I love Paul, but you have to tell men sometimes, hey, this is not okay. Or like, I actually prefer, you know, like you need to like explain things to them. And if you explain things to them 15 times and they still don't get it, of course, that is a problem. But I think it's communication and liking each other. And I always tell Paul, I'm like, I still like you.
Yeah.
And he laughs. He's like, I would hope so. But I was like,
it's,
no,
it's yeah,
it's very different to love someone than to like someone.
Well, that's interesting because then you talk about that phase when like that kind of glimmer goes away, that initial. But like if you like someone at the core, it's very easy to get that back.
Yeah, 100%.
Plus, like losing that really is just like getting a friend. Like, you know, so it's something you can ebb and flow in a way that you can't if you don't like someone.
It's not work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't view my friendships, like the things I do for my friends, I don't view it as work. It's not anything that is take, it's not anything that I find taxing or annoying, because I like these people, I love these people, and I want to do things to make them happy and to show their appreciation. It's the same thing in a relationship, except you're boinking.
And then in a relationship,
that's the,
is,
that's that's the added, you know, bonus.
Well, yeah, and it's like, and you have a partner, right? You have a partner that's there to make your life easier.
Yeah,
when you're
to help you with things, like,
and it's not, I agree. I think that's the way we should view relationships. A lot of people don't, because there's so many other dynamics that come into play.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's, I want to like my, you know, whoever I do end up dating whenever that happens, or like being in a relationship with whenever that happens, I want them to like me and I want to like them. Like, I'm just, I want to be like curious about them as a person, and like who they are, and like,
that's what I think about,
like,
all
the time. What's your deal? Like, how did you grow up? And like, when I, you know, like, who are you? Like, your friends, like, what makes you tick? Like, just who are you?
That's when I see those things about like men not asking women things on dates. Like, you know, it's wild, because when I like someone, I want to know, like, like, what toothpaste do you use? I'm so invested in this.
Like, who were you in high school? Like,
oh my God, that's like, my favorite question. Agreed.
What kind of clubs were you in? I was in marching band and French club. Nerd alert.
Oh my God.
Marching band. Yeah. What did you play?
Drums.
Wait, wasn't that's very like very cool.
Oh, it wasn't very cool.
Drums. No, I mean, it wasn't like, it was like,
you were in like, what's his name? Drumline?
Oh my God, Nick Cannon. Yes. No, shut no. It was like,
no, but what else did you, so like, to bring it back, because I don't want to keep you here for 100 years, but I do think Dinner for One is a really interesting exploration. Can you describe the actual in real life one? Obviously, like, one, how the podcast start led to it. And then I want to know, you say like you learned this thing about liking each other maybe from Meet Cute, but have you learned anything about dating from talking to all these single women? Like, what has it taught you? And like, how has it changed your relationship to date, if at all? Maybe it just has changed your relationship, like, yourself, you know? Like,
one, so how Dinner for One started, is that the first question? Yes. So after about a year, 9 months to a year of debaucherous behavior. Then he did a lot of wine and questionable French men, and just me, just like being a, just
a, it's a breakup. An animal. You were so hard on yourself in the book, yeah. And I was like,
no, but I was out of control.
It. Okay, fair.
I was.
I just thought it
and
was
there were a lot of things I did not mention.
Okay.
I thought it was relatable because I think we've talked about this in the pod. Yeah. Everybody goes a little crazy after a breakup.
There are a lot of things that I didn't mention in the book that just because I knew my mom was going to read it.
Your name's like Nachi Tiny Dagger. Like you stole someone's identity.
So I was going through a hard time, and something really, one of the kind of like incidents that was a wake up call for me that I actually write about in the book led to me being like, okay, I need to take a step back. And I went to hermit mode, which then led me to start cooking these like little dinners for myself as a way to distract myself from, so I wouldn't go out. While I was doing that, I was at a age in my life where a lot of my friends were getting engaged, settling down, moving in with their partners, and I didn't want to be this Debbie Downer. Like, my divorce, my life sucks. So I was like, okay, who can I talk to about this? Or who can I, like, what stories can I read about this? And everything that I found online on these blogs were like, oh my God, and I met Guillaume, and I live on Boulevard Saint-Germain, and the kids dress in Jacquardie and Monoprix, and we just bought a house in Dijon, and I don't work, and I eat croissants all day. And I was just like, and there were also these like blonde white American women, and you know, a lot of American women who moved to Paris for love lived this life, and that's great, and I'm happy for them, but I wasn't living that life, and I knew that I wasn't the only person. That, you know, moved here for love and it didn't work out. But I couldn't find it. So I was like, I'm going to talk about it. I'm sure I'm not the only person, because I'm sure I'm not the only person in Paris. I'm not the only person in the world that has gone through this. So
I love like how alone you feel in a breakup, and you feel like you're the only one. You're like, surely I can't be the only one in the world that's gone through a breakup. Like at the moment, you're like, maybe.
Right? So I was like, yeah, I didn't want to talk about it. And I realized over time that making these little dinners for myself was really helping myself. It was just a kind thing to do for myself, and a really nice thing to do, to take the time to cook a nice meal, to set the table, to either put on jazz, or sometimes I would like put on, and it actually the inspiration to do it as a podcast came from Call Your Girlfriends.
I
loved that podcast, and I would listen to it while I was eating to have like company.
Yeah.
Right? And I would do that. And I really started loving that little moment, that little ritual.
I love that idea of like, it's like kind, it's like respecting yourself again in a way when you're not.
And being nice, just doing something nice for yourself. Yeah. So then I just started the podcast doing that, you know, making dinner for one every episode. I talk about a topic and I cook. And it's become this whole thing, which includes like the supper club and the book and the pop-ups and soon to be retreats.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little about the supper club? Because, you know, I'm obsessed with it, even though I cannot attend.
Listen, in the last newsletter, I shouted you out.
I don't have access to it.
I said, Danny, if she wasn't happily married, which I hope she remains, she would definitely be a supper club girly.
But tell us, because I actually think the supper club is an incredible like piece of community that you've created. Mm-hmm. And so tell us what it is.
So the Supper Club is a monthly gathering. I do it for now. I just do it between the school in Paris. I do it between the school calendar year. So September to June. And once a month, I invite a group of single women to come to my apartment to feast on their fabulous lives. So what that means, single women typically for the most part live alone, but even if they have a roommate, they have to do everything for themselves, right? They have to think about every aspect of their lives for themselves. They don't have the partner where they can, like, the partner will take care of this or take care of that. So it is a moment for a single woman to not have to think about anything. She just shows up to my apartment, and her only responsibility is to have a good time. So that's one part. Second part is something exclusively for single women. Too often, the needs, desires, accomplishments of single women are completely just overlooked because they're not attached to somebody else, because it's not deemed as interesting or important as like getting engaged or getting married or moving with your partner. And I think that is wrong. It is false. And also to meet other like-minded women and realize you're not alone. Like there are so many cool single women in
this world.
That's what
I've been blown away by every time I go.
That it's like, are just living their lives. And also what's great about Supper Club and what I like, and I think that says just something about me as well and like the people I attract and I gravitate towards. These are single women, but like no one is bitter. Like a lot, like people are like, I want a date. I would love to meet someone. Right. I would love to be in a relationship, but it hasn't happened now. So, you know, I get to live my life and be happy. Mm-hmm. And like, it's okay. That doesn't mean something is wrong with me. And I remember the last Supper Club I did a couple weeks ago. it wasn't until a couple days later, and I was, so you're a Supper Club member, so I guess you can know this. After every dinner, I take extensive notes.
Oh, really?
No way.
About the people.
No, but I love journal. This. I love it because this is what I want to know. I'm like, I feel like you must have absorbed so much.
I take extensive notes. And I realized we didn't talk about men once during that dinner. Not one. No one talked about who they were dating, how they were dating. Nothing. We just.
I was going to ask, like, do you prompt conversations or is it just like whatever flows?
No, I just go in. I'm like, I cocktail. I'm like, hey, like this is Gabby. This is so-and-so. This is so-and-so. Or like whenever people walk in, I introduce them. And I, you know, I tell them what the menu is. And I'm like, you know, I started this supper club for this reason. Have fun. And then I got to go cook.
Mm-hmm. So you're like, so,
you're really working. When you talk about that thing of like, you really take care of us.
And that's another thing. That's the other thing I feel as a single woman, like, because I don't have a partner, because no one's taking care of me. And I miss that. And I guess I'm just giving out in some ways a little bit of what I would like in return at some point. Then all the single women that I've met are just, not that my friends who are married and in relationships are not great, whatever. They're fantastic. But the single women I've met have just been so fucking impressive and so cool. And the ones that are here in Paris, they're like building these lives for themselves and doing it alone and like just really trying something that is hard and doing it with such grace and such gumption and tenacity. I'm just like, you're a fucking badass. Like, this needs to be acknowledged, right?
Well, congrats on how successful this has been. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited for the...
I want to take it on the road.
Yeah, well, you're doing...
I'm doing the retreat in the fall in Fiesole in Tuscany, a little town outside of Florence, which I'm very excited about, on an olive oil farm. And I went there for the first time in 2023. It was beautiful, and I loved it. And I thought to myself, oh, it'd be cool to do something here. And here we are a couple of days later actually doing something. So cool. And it's pretty much going to be Dinner for One Supper Club on steroids. So I wanted, it's, again, only for single women. And I want it to be, like, the best slumber party of your life. So we're all not sleeping in the same room. Everybody has their own room.
Adult slumber
party. Yeah, their own, like, you actually have your own little kitchenette.
Oh, cool. Oh, wow.
Your own bathroom. Wow. So, like, even if you want to have a cup of coffee before meeting everyone else in, like, the main
you
house
have
for breakfast
alone
and stuff,
time.
You have alone time. And I've scheduled it, so it's a mix of creative workshops with me, a lot of reflection and writing and, like, getting your feelings out that you have the option to share with everyone, or you can keep for yourself. You're not obligated. So that, and then, like, cooking stuff. I have one class that is around the ritual of the solo dinner, because I think it's a shame that so many people, whether it's eating out or cooking for themselves, they think it's not worth the time or the effort, especially cooking for themselves. And I think that is wrong. So talk about that. And a lot of solo time to just be, you know, hang out with yourself. And just like, and dinners and stuff. And just bask in like the beauty of your life as a single woman. And
I love that. Can you tell us how many slots are left on the retreat? Like, if people want to sign up?
So no one has. So I haven't opened up the booking.
You haven't opened it.
I've just done the teaser because so working out a few things for like the last night, which I have something very special planned. I'm working out details for that. And then once that is confirmed,
male strippers, isn't it? I'm kidding.
No magic mic situation going on.
Can you imagine magic mic?
That would be crazy.
In a remote Tuscan town. Giacomo's like, hello.
Ciao.
Bella. Buongiorno, principessa.
That would be so wild. Especially considering in the book I talk about the strippers in the office.
Oh my god.
At the advertising agents. I have photos. Crazy. I can show you photos of that. I have photos.
That was there's pictures, a for context, there's a scene where they what was the movie they're trying to recreate?
Wolf of Wall Street.
Her company tries to recreate a scene from Wolf of Wall Street, and there was like strippers and like little people. Yeah. I mean, it just
they
sounds
were
like
each other up. It was wild. So yeah, I'm going to recreate that in physio.
I'm dying. Okay, but so it'll open up. People can watch your Instagram for it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Watch my Instagram for it. It'll open up in like a week or so. I'm very, very excited. I have all these creative workshops planned, cooking stuff. One of the nights I'm really looking forward to is like I planned a rom-com night where we just like sit around and watch one of my favorite rom-coms called An Unmarried Woman.
I've never seen that.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's set in the 1970s New York. This man breaks up with his wife, outside on the street, like they're going for lunch or something, and he starts crying. She's like, "What's wrong with you?" And he's like, "I have something to tell you. I fall in love with somebody else." And it's like the woman who works at the counter at fucking Bloomingdale's. No shade to her, but like whatever. And then she goes on this. She's been with him for 17 years, right? She's in her like early 30s. They have a kid. And she goes on this entire journey of like discovering herself as an unmarried woman and like really leaning into it and like loving it. And she's such a good rom-com.
Oh my God. Why have I never even heard of it? Yeah.
So I have stuff like that planned. And like that night's going to be like, you know, with like small bites to eat. And another day I'm really excited about is we're going to go to the market one morning and then come back and we're going to have do a bunch of stuff like solo after, like you're going to have a free afternoon along with a few things. And then that night we're going to cook dinner together with stuff we bought at the market so that you can see, like if you're not used to cooking for yourself, you can see, I go to the market, I get this. This is what I can make with it. This is what, and then we can eat together. Yeah. So I'm really, really excited.
God,
I think
cool.
I think it's going to be really fun. So yeah.
Okay, well, people watch your Instagram, but
this
is exciting. Come to PhysioLA with me. And, sorry, last thing, space is very limited because I want to keep that intimacy of the supper club. So the supper club is only, it's like, what, 5 to 6 people max? Because I don't want anyone, when you're in a big group of people, there's always, like, the person that has the biggest personality and they kind of take over. And I don't want that. I want everyone to feel comfortable. I want everyone to feel seen and heard. And
so you make everyone take a personality test before they come on.
And a part of the group. And I feel like it's easier to also, like, if I notice, like, you know, I don't know, Mary is like talking a bit too much, I can easily ask, you know, hey, Sarah, like, what do you think about what Mary said? And like bring her into the conversation and doesn't look so awkward or feel so awkward. So yeah, so it's also very, very small. So it's going to be like, I'm really excited. We'll see what happens.
Love it.
It's like an Eat, Pray, Love meets Sex in the City. Meets
Chippendales. Just kidding. Okay. I'm done.
I have to think about that. I'm going to put them on a website. It's like Eat, Pray, Love meets Sex in the City meets Girlfriends. Ma. Did you guys watch Girlfriends?
Yes.
Ma. Girlfriends.
That was on public TV for,
there, through thick and thin.
Who isn't Tracy?
Tracy Ellis
Ross.
Tracy
Ellis Ross, yeah.
Best style ever, by the way.
Always.
Like, literally style. Someone who has just come into themselves. I can't, every time I see her
like
in an outfit.
She has a snake, like, arm bracelet thing. I've been looking for
I haven't seen so many people with those lately.
I want that. I think it's sexy.
Time for our next segment. How do you not know this? This is our segment where basically we tell each other about things the other person doesn't know about yet, and we kind of school them on something new. So, Dani, I'll let you start.
What do
you teach us about? Yeah,
sure. I want to talk about this article I read on Bon Appetit called it basically said that dessert is taking over. Sorry, ice cream is taking over the dessert menus in most restaurants. And I have noticed, I feel, a trend.
Have you noticed it here?
Yes. I mean, I do think ice cream is becoming trendier. I think ice cream was always a staple of the dessert category, but I think it was more like
kids would eat it. For me, it was always kind of an afterthought. Like, yeah. It was like if there was like a couple, then I'm, you know.
And like for me, it was always very casual. Like, you know, like you eat it from like the ice cream truck. Like it wasn't a big thing. But now you're going to like this, like really famous hipster restaurants, and it's like the only thing on the dessert menu is some sort of ice cream dish. So I read the article, and we're probably going to see this more and more. And the reason is two reasons. People love ice cream. It's pretty cheap to make. And a lot of restaurants cannot afford to have pastry chefs. So having an ice cream
as
dessert.
So who's making your ice cream, the chef?
I guess when you do a full dessert menu with like a pastry chef, you can be very elaborate, of course. Mm-hmm. But when you have ice cream, it's quite simple.
Can you make
ice
cream too? Have you done it?
I haven't made ice cream yet. No. Oh. I don't have an ice cream machine.
That's fair. I think you do.
But also,
I want that. What does everyone have? The
creamy?
Creamy, yeah.
That's the other thing. I think ice cream is becoming trendy. Kind of like, you know,
it's
when we had
democratized.
Yeah, well, remember when we had the cupcake phase? And then we're in the cookie phase right now. Mm-hmm. And I think ice cream is the next one. That's my prediction.
So these are like the three most basic things in the world, and yet we somehow have to bring them back for trend resurgences.
but it's true. It's so funny how certain desserts have their moment. Like I don't think brownies have had a moment in a while.
Like, you should call the next one.
Well, ice cream for sure.
But call the one after ice cream.
Oh, let's see. Maybe brownies. A blondie. Oh,
like
I love a blondie.
What is in a blondie?
I don't know, but it's like a white brownie. I don't know.
I'm like, what actually is it? Nuts?
I have no idea, but it's pretty good. But yeah, so look out. And I wanted to offer up my 2 cents on the ice cream scene in Paris. I don't like to go to the trendy place that rhymes with Schmolderl anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they're fucking assholes.
Oh, no.
They're always like...
There's like one nice person, but then there's always like two mean people. Sorry, we're going on the books with it.
Yeah. I didn't say the name, Schmolderl. Yeah. Anyway, if you don't want to line up or if you don't want to go there because I remember one time I went with Gabby and we asked, oh, because they have wine and ice cream. Yeah. And we're like, which one should we pair with this? And the guy was like, you don't have to pair it.
No,
and
he goes, we don't do that here.
Oh, gosh.
And I go, pair the wine with the ice cream? The only two things you have are wine and ice cream. Like, it's such a strange... I just can't get over that response.
He was mean for no reason. Yeah. And so do they have Exxon ice cream? Yes. But now...
This is going to be the scandal that we want. Jenny keeps being like, we want to cause a podcast scandal.
I want a feud. But I discovered another place, which is pretty famous. So it's not like a hidden gem or anything. It's by the canal and it's called JJ Hings, I think. Really good. Owned by New Zealand.
Have you been
a
here?
New Zealand couple, no, I think.
I've heard so much about it.
It's really good.
Yeah, fair.
But it's really good. For you, yeah. It's really good. They're super nice. They have really interesting flavors. They also make their cones, like they're homemade and stuff. So really, really good if you want an alternative. But I'm sure we're going to see a lot of
ice cream. Our friend has a business, Kev Glass.
Oh, yes, Kev Glass. Yeah.
Super cute, Emily.
She does pop-ups.
She has an ice cream machine, right?
Yeah.
Her ice cream is so good.
She's
got
it. She's nailed it. Yeah. It took a while. That's why I was asking you because she had to do a lot of different formulations. You know my girl, Wishbone Kitchen, who I don't know at all, but I like to follow. She's doing an ice cream a week this summer. So she has inspo.
But see, it's like ice cream everywhere. I mean, I know it's summer, so that makes sense. But I do think we're going to see it like in all the trendy restaurants. So that's my...
Love it.
How did you know cake girl. I love a cake.
You're a cake girl.
Huh. I'm a frosting
girl.
I want
an ice cream cake.
Only if it's Carvel.
Only if it's Carvel.
Interesting.
What is your favorite cake? I'm putting you on the spot. Because I love pound cake.
Yeah, like
love pound cake.
I like any kind of like yellow spongy.
You want spongy cake? Okay. I want it to be so thick I can barely swallow.
No, I like I like a spongy yellow cake. With like very intense like flavors, like hibiscus, like ginger, like pistachio. Like I want to taste it.
You made hibiscus for your job the other day, right? Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you got for us? What are you going to teach us about?
So this is an article by my friend Lauren Collins in The New Yorker. She's a writer. She's a staff writer for The New Yorker. She's in France, in Paris. And it's how a hazelnut spread became a sticking point in Franco-Algerian relations. It is so effing good. Not only is Lauren an excellent writer.
Where it was
a hazelnut spread became a sticking point in the Franco-Algerian relations.
Oh.
The wildly popular Nutella competitor, El Morgine, has been banned by the European Union, a move some see as politically motivated. And that's kind of true.
I didn't know that.
So this El Morgine has been, you know, been sold in Europe and France forever, but it recently has gotten a bit of buzz because of social media and TikTok, and especially like second generation Algerians who are very present on social media talking about it. So it's become like super popular, like sold out everywhere. And it's starting to, I guess, be in competition with Nutella.
Wow.
And France is like, brown people, step back. It's not going to be like
that.
You
crazy
can't
see that it's bad.
But how are they able to justify banning it?
Well, they justified it because they said that they're using this like specific powdered milk in Algeria that can't be shipped to France. But the funny part is, which Lauren talks about in this article, is that the powdered milk comes from France.
Ah.
So the manufacturers in Algeria import the powdered milk from France, put it in their...
They can't say they're racist. So they have to blame something.
For the hazelnut spread, and then ship it back to France.
Wow, so it's unwarranted, the ban.
Yeah, 100%.
So they're trying to overturn the ban?
Wow. Well, they're not trying to overturn the ban, they're just kind of like, this is weird. So it's a very interesting read.
And it's Algerian?
It's Algerian. And you already know French.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Just give them. That's the least you could do for them.
Right? So it's a very well-written article and very interesting. And now I want to try this El Morgine.
Now I want to try it too.
Yeah, I'm obsessed.
Should that be your next snack? Needs a track of sales if it went up since you
Texted her and be like, you got to let us know what's up with El Morgine.
Oh, it's so cool.
And I texted her today. I was like, you can tell me if you have some at home.
Wait, I want to try it now.
It's supposedly like...
Let's try to find it somewhere. In the dark web.
Yeah. I want to try it. That's so interesting.
What's yours,
Gabby? Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I love when people take... I feel like food journalism is so interesting. Because not that she's a food journalist. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, staff journalist. But I think it's like food reporting is so interesting because it's such a conduit to so many other cultural stories. And I always think... If I were a food journalist, I'd probably get annoyed by people's perception of that. You know, like, you just eat food all the time. Yeah, and some of the best writers I know cover culture via food. And like Ligaia Mishan, I don't know if you ever read her for New York Times. Like some of these writers are like incredible the way that they dissect their shows and cultures.
Right? Yeah. It's and it's so, so relatable. It's everyone so relatable. Can relate everyone, to some whatever food. Yeah. It's a good vehicle to tell a story.
Yeah. And everyone is interested in food.
That's exactly some, everyone can relate to
because everyone eats.
Yeah, everyone eats. Yeah. We need it to survive. Yeah.
That's such a good way to put that. Yeah. No, mine is okay. So I talked about that guy Luke Bateman a couple weeks ago.
Oh yes, you're
like the hunky really hot guy.
Yeah, Australian. No.
Also, talk about bar being low. Oh my God, he reads.
Oh, I know, I know. But I will say, like, he seems like okay. I don't know anything. Yeah, this is coming from nowhere. Yeah, he seems to be a fairly gentle guy. Like, he talks a lot about self-help books. Mm-hmm. He talks a lot about like countering his anger and masculinity and blah blah blah. And so he's an interesting person. Like I think in terms of a man on the internet, I'd rather have him than a lot of other men on the internet. So he got, I don't know if you guys have seen the scandal though. So he's blown up. I guess he's blown up like my niche of the internet, which I guess is like hot Australian men coupled with like fantasy novels. But he got a book deal from, so he has never written from what I know.
Okay.
And he got a two book deal from Simon
Schuster. Two book deal.
Simon Schuster.
Okay.
Because
of his social media following.
Because of his social media following.
This is a part of my scandal, but I'm going to hold on to it.
Okay.
I, you know, I got a book agent reach out to me when I went viral on TikTok.
I'm not surprised.
They're just giving
it.
Out book deals to anyone who has like,
but that doesn't translate into sales.
I agree. That's why I told her I'm not right.
And I think they take risks. I think they it's the same thing with TikTok musicians. Like they take a risk.
But what about the person that's actually been doing the work, that's actually been writing, that's actually been
playing
music
for 15
years? No, but that's it. No, that's it. You're basically, this is a scandal. So I find it a really interesting conversation because like, so everyone's like, fuck you now. Basically, everyone to him is like, fuck you. And so everyone turned on him and they're like, how dare you? And
did he announce he got a deal?
Yeah. Okay. And he was like crying and he was like very overwhelmed. He's like, he talks a lot about being a little kid and how he had to like hide his books because like he wasn't allowed to talk about that he read. And I don't know. So like, you have an empathy for him. And this is where I think the conversation of nuance comes up because I fully get and actually like very much take the side of all these people who are commenting and like, I've been writing for years, I've submitted multiple proposals, I have an agent, I haven't been able to land this guy posts for 2 weeks on TikTok and gets a book deal.
It's not even like he got one, and they paid him they probably paid him a pretty
penny. Yeah, I'd imagine
books supposed to be
they're gonna be fantasy books.
Oh,
he's gonna write fantasy books, which is like the category he reviews. So everyone turned against him. And but then it's really interesting to think about because you're like, whose problem is this? You know, it's like, should he, would you have liked him to do in that situation? Yeah. And a lot of, there's also now pushback from the other side. And I'm still trying to form what my opinion is, but I think it does make me think a lot about, yes, the notion of influencers, people getting privileges, frankly, like attractiveness, just like things that you can't control, being like objectively hot. Mm-mm. Also, like, what is his responsibility in this moment? Like, could he navigate this in a way that would give another person an opportunity? Could he platform someone else via this? But you know, my initial reaction is kind of like, I feel like the anger is lightly misplaced. Mm-hmm. Like I feel the anger, but I'm like, if we have like basically two examples of healthy men on the internet and you take down the one that we have, like, is that the right source of, or the right target for anger? I don't really know the answer, but I've been so interested to see how this plays out, you know? Like,
I think the anger should be placed on the publishers.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that said, I got a book deal. As someone who wasn't like, I mean, I've always written and I did take writing classes and stuff, but I never like presented myself as a writer. And I had this blog that was attached to my podcast at that time. Yeah. And I, like I said, I did take writing courses and I worked in advertising.
It's also like, what is a writer?
Yeah. What is a writer? Yeah. I worked in advertising at the time where I was a copywriter. So like I didn't dare to call myself a writer. At that time, but I got a book deal anyway, just because I had a good idea. But there were examples of my writing. I don't know. Yeah.
Just because I had a good idea. Yeah, I think that's also a valid reason.
But I don't know. I think the owner should be on the publishers as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we
all don't give him a fuck. Sorry,
I should like two.
Don't give him a two.
I mean, here's the thing. I think the reality of our current situation is people are online, and if you manage to capture an audience, that has high value for many industries.
Well, it's a built-in audience, so it's like they know exactly.
That doesn't equate to anything.
It doesn't.
It might not, but it could.
But exactly. Risk. The thing is, like, do you, like you said, maybe they just want to take a risk and be like, this could make for a great book thing. And I do think if I'm going to play devil's advocate, it's like, it is interesting that it could be bad and it could be good. Anyone can become a writer in the sense that it doesn't, it's not only for the people who want to journalism school or grad school, because it does feel very exclusive in that sense. And I do think people have stories to tell, and just because they're not like the traditional writer doesn't mean they can't tell them. But I do think there is something there.
Tinks wrote a book. Tinks wrote a book.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it was ghostwritten.
Oh yeah, that was the whole.
Wait, what?
Oh yeah, that was the whole.
Someone else wrote it for her.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yes, and it was like a whole scandal. Yeah, it was a scandal because
I didn't even hear. Well,
her book was. There was another scandal because it was like a story about lesbians, and people were like, "Why are you writing about lesbians if you're not a lesbian?"
Wow. So she put her name on a book. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Interesting. Okay.
Anyway, but I do think. Yeah, it's like it's a weird.
That's why I think it brings situation. Up a lot of conversations. Yeah, you're right. And it's kind
I don't
of
know where I fall on it either, but I do feel like if you're gonna be mad, then
yeah, I do feel bad for him. And then I'm like, am I allowed to feel bad for him? But I'm like, I kind of feel bad for him. Like, like I don't know. It just kind of feels like I'm not sure that's the guy that we need to like need villainize to crush, right now. You know, which again, am I like defending men? Who knows?
But also, does he need two book deals? We don't know.
I don't know. We don't
stay
know.
Tuned. We'll
yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah. Ready for our next segment.
Snack and spiral.
Woo! All right, so Sue, what did you bring us a snack today?
I brought ginger hibiscus cake that has been on the menu of the pop-up I've been doing at Au Vin Vivant. So yeah.
Say it again.
Au Vin Vivant.
Okay.
Say it in the 18. Fast. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Because everyone kept saying it when people were talking about you. And I'm like, wah, 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 wah. Like, I'm like, what is everyone saying?
ABV.
ABV.
Yeah. It's really good. I'm going to have another piece now, but I had it last time I was there. And I really liked it.
It's the perfect. We were just talking about cake texture. It's the perfect cake texture. Mm.
It's so, yeah.
It's just like crumbly, but a little bit moist. It's so good.
Very flavorful. It's like my cakes.
Yeah.
I put a little salt on top.
The salt really works. Yeah. How did you know to do that?
Just it like just brings out the flavors.
God. I love it.
I love it.
Danny, what do you bring? What'd you bring?
I have Madeline's. Sorry, I'm eating.
Yeah, actually. Cake. I did that at the worst possible moment.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I brought Madeline's from my favorite place. And the reason it's my favorite place is not only because it's in my neighborhood, but I actually went to, I'm not going to
Have you ever
it.
Traveled for a snack? I need to know.
Well, I have. The banana bread was far.
Fair.
But. Okay. I actually went to the famous hotel, which I won't name, that has supposedly the best Madeleines in Paris. Mm-hmm. They're so expensive. Mm-hmm. There's always a line at the door. They're trash.
Oh, no. Trash.
They were so dry. The flavor was not good. I really honestly hate. They were like coated in like this glaze that I'm like, it's just not good.
It looked pretty, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Mm. And I was so disappointed. I went there for New Year's and I bought like a few to have after dinner. Mm-hmm. They were not good at all. These are so good. This is like a literally like a window in the 9th where you can't sit anywhere. You just take them to go. It's called Le Comptoir de la Madeleine. And they just have really good flavor and texture. It's kind of crunchy on the outside, but soft on the inside. And they have two that are filled. One has salted caramel. The other one has Nutella. Mm. And they're really good. I'll let you try them and you let me know what you think. But they're my favorite Madeleines.
Okay. Oh, I love it. Can I ask a question? Does anyone else think that Madeleines look like rubber ducks? What? Seriously?
Rubber
it's like ducks? All I can think of looking kinda at them.
Kind of looks like a spaceship.
Yeah, I would say anything. Spaceship. Like very Jetsons.
Yeah.
Jetsons, that's fair. Still getting rubber duck, but hear you. I brought fruit.
I love it. I brought fruit.
No, it's good. It's a good balance.
I brought fresh strawberries. I love strawberries.
Strawberries are very juicy as well.
You know what's crazy?
Yeah, they look plump.
They have three different kinds. This is on the place of Rue des Martyrs at the very bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Three different kinds of strawberries. Which is just like crazy to me. Yeah. I'm so used to there kind of being one genre. Mm. There was this, there was a darker red, same size. And then there was a smaller, almost like kind of wild strawberry vibe. But I love that. I just love that you can kind of.
Do you know what kind these are?
No. Oh, it's fine. Probably says somewhere. Anyway, brought those. But like I was saying, you'll see on the video, I was supposed to pair them with creme fraiche. But it took a little tumble in my bag.
A little tumble?
So creme fraiche ended up in her laptop.
Creme fraiche is inside my laptop now. So
love your British accent.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on it.
It's good.
It's not great.
It's excellent.
So we're going to snack after this. But okay, let's do another round, same order. Spiral time, guys. Okay, Sue, what is your spiral? What are you spiraling about?
So I have two things that I'm spiraling on or why I'm mad. One is very much aligned with, what's his name? Luke
Bateman.
Because it's someone who has been online for a long time with Dinner for One and trying to get it to the next level. And, you know, trying to potentially maybe sell another book or cookbook, whatever, around this idea of Dinner for One and Supper Club and all that stuff. I'm getting a lot of pushback because I don't have enough followers. Mm. And it's so frustrating.
It's actually feedback that they give you?
Wow. It's so frustrating because here I am doing so much and I'm a real person in this world. People can actually eat my food. They can actually meet me. They can actually be a part of what I'm creating. And yet it doesn't seem to matter because online people aren't looking at
2025, me. 2025,
baby. And I'm just like, I'm so upset and I'm so frustrated. And it's like, I already, like everything I spoke about before, like supper club, retreat, pop-ups,
I mean, it's insane.
The podcast, like I do it all by myself. I'm sorry. I just don't have the time to also like record everything that I do and then edit it. For me, I think I posted a reel the other day and it took me literally 2 hours to do this one reel. It's just not, that's not my skill set. And like that goes into like, ties into kind of like another thing that I'm mad at that, what I'm spiraling about that is related to that. It's like, why can't people just have one craft today or like one thing they're good at and be excellent at it? Like why?
As a economy?
No, but like as a writer, as someone who writes, right? And also like I happen to be able to be a decent cook as well. So there's two very different things that I continue to try to perfect and I'm good at. Why do I also have to be like a PR maven, a marketing wizard, an editor, a videographer, like a photographer? Like what the fuck? Like, can I be just good at one or two things and that's it? And also like these fucking,
no, this is what it's for. Sorry. Go, round
also, these big companies, these brands, these publishers, they promise quote unquote exposure and they promise like all this, like, I guess like money, but where's the longevity in it? It's like this. There's so much siphoning of people and their talent.
You know, that's how TikTok musicians, they like literally will pay them for one song and they basically like scam them.
Yeah.
Like
for what in return? Yeah. For what kind of longevity in return? You take my IP and you take everything. And this is after I drank the Kool-Aid and I've worked really hard and I've all of a sudden become this master of everything, which means I'm a master of nothing. I've spread myself thin. I'm constantly online. I'm stressed about algorithms and views and this and that. And then you suck everything from me. And then when I need a break and when I stop, I'm no longer worthy and I'm no longer good enough. And you're just going after the next person who people are commenting on their stuff. It's so strange. And last thing, I sort of kind of went viral, I guess, on TikTok. I posted like this random video and people seemed to like it.
Recently?
Yeah. And it was so unnerving. Like all the comments and all the attention and all that. I was like, whoa, 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 this is too much for me. I don't think it's normal for us to live like that and to be like that, number one. So that's the number one thing. The number two thing, this is also social media. Thinking about social media a lot lately. The number two thing is these relationship gurus on social media.
I want to hear about this because you told me about it.
I just don't understand why people don't realize it, especially TikTok. It is an entertainment app. These people are paid. These people get money based on their views. So they're going to do and say things that are going to fan the flames and make sure people watch them, their eyes are there, the algorithm pushes their content.
It's whatever. What they want, not what they
That's
need.
What they yeah. want. So you can't just go around like, you can blindly follow these people. And I say that because they're all over the place. And I realized, and I wrote about this in the newsletter, that people, for some reason, when I tell people that I'm actually interested in dating, because of Dinner for One, they're kind of surprised and taken aback. They're like, you want a date? But I thought you were okay being with Dinner for One. I'm like, just because I'm okay with being single and still living my life doesn't mean that I wouldn't want a romantic relationship anymore. Something I wouldn't, just because I'm not on the hunt or I'm like constantly talking about it doesn't mean that's something that I want in my life. And I think these relationship gurus on TikTok, on Instagram, whatever, they've created this, they've made relationships in some ways, not relationships, but like, being single, like, polarizing. It's like, either you are a man-hating, fuck men, I'm all about me, nah, 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 nah. Or you're, like, this desperate woman who, like, all she wants to do is find a relationship because that's how she feels she's going to be whole. There isn't this place, there's no conversation online, or I haven't seen it at least, where, like, I'm okay being single, I'm living my life, I'm having fun. So this is why, come closer. This is why you should follow Dinner for One. Because I'm not trying to scam anybody.
She's the real love guru.
I'm not trying to scam anybody. I'm just showing you, trying to show you or influence you on how to live your best life. I'm not over here with 150, 30, 40, 300,000 people following me. It's just me and you, one-on-one. Brands aren't even interested in me.
That's how low key I am. That's
how legit I am.
That's how legit I am. Brands aren't even interested in me. I'm not giving them nothing they want.
If you can take that and make that into a full life, that's incredible, by the way.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
Brands are not even interested in me. Girl. That's why I'm legit.
I'm obsessed with this. As someone who works in PR, I'm obsessed with brands don't even want me.
Brands don't even want me because I'm so real.
I love the perspective, but from a strategy point, if you want me to
PR the brands don't even want me, I can do it.
And then it's also like...
But how do you work with... Because
there won't be a brand that wants to work with someone who brands don't want.
Yeah.
That's like... There will be.
Yeah.
But you'd have to double down in a way that's like...
I don't know. What else can I do? I barely post. But
then it's not genuine because then you're like, I'm working with a brand.
Sure, but everything is a conduit to something else.
You gotta be authentic.
Okay, Dani, what do you got?
So mine is my spiral is around. Do you know what ManyChat is?
No.
ManyChat content, I fucking hate it.
What?
So ManyChat is a software that I'm sure you've seen all these influencers and everyone use. So it's basically because you can't share links on Instagram, like on your feed posts, you can only share links on your stories or on your bio. Instead of telling people link in bio, because the reality is a lot of people are not going to go find the link in your bio. There's this new software that pairs with your Instagram and I guess maybe with TikTok too. And essentially you will see a lot of people post a video and be like, I found the best restaurant in Paris under 50 euros with a Michelin star chef, blah, blah, blah. Comment Paris.
Oh,
and I'll send
DM
you.
Yes.
Yes,
wait, that's what that is.
That's what that is.
Are they going through their comments and DMing that every single time?
No, it's a bot, basically. And the bot will, if you comment, like, they'll have, like, certain words, right? So let's say they say, comment Paris and I'll send you my Paris guide. Then you'll get a DM. You have to comment Paris. And then you'll get a DM from this bot with the link that whatever they're trying to send you. So I get the mechanics of it because, again, I work in social. I understand why it's useful, and it's because it's easier to share links that way, but also it creates engagement because everybody's commenting Paris in your posts, right? But I'm like, it just feels so robotic. It's literally a bot.
Well, it's
right?
funny because like now that I know, it's creepy. When I didn't know, I was like, oh, nice.
No, it's not the actual influencer, because can you imagine? They have to like respond to every single person. So part of me understands it. I understand the mechanics of it and I understand why it's easier. But I just hate that everything is becoming clickbaity content.
Yeah, I thought people were really taking their time to DM me.
No, it's a bot.
That's unfortunate. No, mine kind of ties to what you were talking about, Sue. It's just like this idea of I've been obsessed with the idea of confidence. And I'm so fucking sick of confident people. And like, I mean it in a way where it's like, confidence without curiosity, confidence without reflection, confidence for the sake of a one-line comment. And there's this girl who wrote this Substack, Nikita Wally. It's really good. And it's called The Rise of the TikTok Oracle. And it's all about, it's just all about like how the only way you can make any cultural commentary these days is to make a very hard line, hot take that has absolutely no nuance, that has no degree of exploration or curiosity or article citation or research. It's just a take. And because that take is powerful social media wise, that's what goes viral. So people then start to attribute rightness, like correctness, to that take. And you know, there's a Substacker that will go unnamed to me, but there are several and who have risen to like true degrees of fame and wealth from doing this, and they create their own perpetual cycle. And I could talk about this forever, and someday I will write my Substack thing on this, but the fact that like this is also what's happening in US politics and that just people saying things with an absurd level of confidence, I just can't take it. Like, for me, that's why I love Derek Thompson and I mention him all the time, because I just think he has a really interesting way of exploring topics and getting to at least some degree of nuance in them. And I love that he's found success, and I love that some of these people have. But I'm just burnt out. I'm burnt out on people who are confident without having ever earned or deserved the ability to be confident. And like, I'm not talking about true confidence, by the way. I'm talking about performed lack of nuance, one-line confidence. And I'm like, the life is so complicated. It's so cliche, but the more I learn, the truly less I know about anything. Yeah, so how many people out here knowing so many things?
Most people don't know
anything. They don't.
Which is why they go on TikTok like, I'm going to tell you the five best places.
They're selling an idea. But also it's like arrogance too, right?
Because
it's
a lot of arrogance.
It's like, I'm right and you don't know shit. And it's like,
and also if you do go viral and then people then, you know, praise you, or, you know, they give you like positive reinforcement, that just, you know, encourages you to keep going.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so. For sure.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's a cycle. So anyway, yeah. I feel like ours are all tied to the same theme today, which is like burn it all to the ground.
Let's go off the grid.
Yes. God, like get me in fucking somewhere in Southern Italy, make my plantain gnocchis.
Yeah, you guys got to try the plantain gnocchi. Live my best life. Sue, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for being here.
This episode, just so everyone knows it now, is over 2 hours. So there's going to have to be some edits.
We did record 20 minutes of us eating, which we'll definitely cut out. But
unless anyone wants we'll start a Patreon and it's just ASMR. Chewy noises.
Literally.
Let's get an OnlyFans. And okay.
It's just Sutania chewing. Okay, thanks everyone. Thank bye.
This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.